This is Meet the Movie Press. It's February 15th, 2019 this week. Oscars controversy. Wouldn't be a week without it. Rian Johnson still Star Wars-ing and singer Sonja is off. Plus, the week's big movie releases and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Meet the Movie Press.
This is Meet the Movie Press. It is February the 15th, 2019. My name is Simon Thompson. Hello, welcome. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ShowbizSimon. There's also a Facebook page. This is Simon Thompson. And you can see my work everywhere from Reuters to Forbes and beyond. Welcome to the show if you've never watched this before. And if you have, welcome back. Welcome home. With me on the panel this week is Dimitri Panos and Scott Menzel. Dimitri, who are you? Where can we find you, please?
And beyond. You can find me here at Popcorn Talk Networks, Meet the Movie Press, yep. And also Popcorn Talk Networks, Anatomy of a Movie, which today we'll be breaking down the Lego Movie, and then I will have an Anatomy of a Movie quickie.
What?
Talking about Happy Death Day to You. There are so many movies, so little time, that, we're going to start doing, just quick condensed versions of Anatomy.
And who doesn't love a quickie? Scott Menzel, who are you? Where can we find you?
I am Scott Menzel. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Other Scott M, and also at WeLiveEntertainment.com. And be sure to check out LAOFCS Weekly, which is today at 11 a.m.
Thank you. And in the chat already, if you are watching the show live, you can take part in the chat every single week. We really appreciate your input. Thank you so much. If you've already taken part and if you're thinking about it, welcome. We would like that. First in the room today is a Batman big fan saying, hi, I'm a big fan from Q8. Hello, Batman big fan. Glamoury saying, don't get them started. They'll talk about Ben Affleck for 20 minutes. Think you've confused us with Ben Affleck's agent.
What do you think about what happened on Jimmy Kimmel the other night? Never mind.
Okay, let's not talk about Ben Affleck, although we will be coming to Blumhouse Corner at some point in the show today. First topic of the show, Oscars category controversy. Well, this went down well this week, didn't it?
Oh, yes.
In case you're not aware of this, a number of what many in the industry would consider key categories, because of the art of filmmaking, are being shoved into ad breaks. Didn't go down particularly well. A lot of pushback from the industry, unsurprisingly. Oscars now kind of going,
they're actually pushing back on this.
Which is staggering. Stupid.
They're pushing back.
Yeah.
You know, it reminds me of, all right, we're familiar with the comedian Gilbert Gottfried.
Yes.
Okay.
So oh my God!
That's him! That's
I know him. Gilbert Gottfried!
I know Gilbert Gottfried!
He's so quiet!
Well, he has this philosophy that when he is on stage and he feels that he's bombing,
yeah,
right? He, from that point, will just go full-on nuclear on the audience. And just because he does, at that point, he doesn't care, and I'm going to blow them all up. I'm just going to bomb the best I can.
Yep.
This seems to be the philosophy that the Academy is taking. It's like they just seem, every decision they have made has just been worse than the other. And now they're pushing back. So it's like they don't care.
But it's almost like, did they not expect there to be pushback?
I know.
It's not like this is the People's Choice Awards, where they are a popular ceremony where really it's about the product rather than the process and the art. Where the Oscars are not only about the product, but also the process and the art. And what they appear to be doing is kind of pushing the process and the art further down, deprioritizing it, pushing it further down. And it's not as if it's like people don't watch the Oscars because, well, cinematography is on it. I'm turning off. It's not exactly a ratings winner consistently these days. And I think you're kind of throwing the baby out with the bathwater a little bit. It was a very weird decision.
Yeah, it was a horrible decision, too. Because, there used to be a time when the best editor, whoever won that, 9 out of 10, because it was always, best picture as well, that it was historically, it would match up. So if somebody won best editor, if a picture won best editing, it could win best picture. And cinematography, I mean, some of my favorite moments of watching the Academy Awards are when they would do those little, Cinema 101 or Film 101, and they would talk about, this is what editing does.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
You remember these things?
Yeah,
and you would always, obviously, the French Connection would be put in there. Mm-hmm. So I always appreciated that. And I thought, in my dopey ways that maybe the audience would appreciate.
The audience often, yeah. Whenever I come out of a movie, when I go and see it, not at a press screening, but, you know, with everybody else,
right.
The amount of times I hear normal, regular people going, how did they do that? This is how you tell people how they did that and reward it.
And it's in a commercial show.
Yeah. And what else is puzzling to me is the fact that I thought the whole reason why we have no host and why we're doing all these different things is because we wanted to save time.
Mm.
So why would you cut out awards from that? The right. reason people
from an award show.
Yeah, from the reason people want to watch the show is to see who wins an award. Mm. So why take that away? It's not like people don't come to the Academy Awards. It's not like a regular award show that anyone's throwing on that maybe someone's going to show up.
It's not the MTV Movie
right.
Awards.
Like, everyone usually shows up to this damn thing. So why take away from that?
Yeah, I don't...
It's a very weird decision. Zeno Hour saying in the chat, the Oscars are pissing everyone off. Yeah, I mean, this year, it's like I said last week or the week before, it's kind of like the Oscars committee knew that they had to do something. So they started to do something, but they didn't know what the thing was. So they're trying a lot of things. And it's not going well.
No.
It's really not going well.
And especially those two categories.
It's very strange.
One dictates a pacing and a feel of the movie. The other one is the complete look of the movie. And, you know, Zoe Deschanel tweeted, I think it was last night, about this whole thing. I'm going, yeah, shocker. Your dad is one of the best in the business, and his faction of movie making isn't going to be celebrated for everybody to see. It's going to be, during the commercials, we gave this away.
Senior Nerd is saying in the chat, I don't think I'll see the Oscars this year. The constant fuck-ups the Academy are doing right now, pissing me off as a film lover. No, I think absolutely we are seeing this amongst, you know, the film-loving. And there's a large amount of the, you know, people who don't watch the Oscars because they particularly care about, you know, the awards from an art and an industry point of view. They just want to know who wins because everybody likes that kind of, you know, I wonder, there's five people up for something, who was the person who won the thing? But I think, you know, when you are starting to alienate your audience and you're alienating the body, the members of the body that you represent, it's weird. You know, I don't see what the end game is here. I'm really not quite sure what this is looking to achieve. I guarantee if these awards were sponsored and there was bucks attached to it, they'd be straight back in those shows. If it was the Netflix award for editing or the Amazon Studios sound, you know, awards, that would be in the show. They'd make sure they found room for that in the show. It just seems like a very, very odd decision.
And the other thing,
I'm good to see people push back, though. I'm really pleased.
Well, same here, but, you know, we are, you know, I'm part of this great panel that, and also with Anatomy of
Which
the
panel's
movie,
that?
The, right here.
Oh, okay. First time for everything.
Meet the movie press, everybody. And even on Anatomy of a Movie,
like,
we respect the creative, right?
Yep.
We get the collaborative process, but the creatives and the Academy, which is supposed to be celebrating this, is really, it's an insult and a slap to the face to these people who are, basically, you have a show because of the movies these people create, and it is a collaborative effort, which includes editing and cinematography.
Yes.
Someone's saying, Zeno, I was saying in the chat, I quite like this analogy, the Oscars are the fire festival of award shows, and there's no Andy King to fix it. If you've seen that documentary, you'll entirely get that, and that's very funny. Fishman Dildo, the Oscars are like, no, okay, I can't read that.
Yeah.
Yes. But no, naughty Fishman Dildo. So it's a very, very strange decision. I mean, what the outcome of this is going to be, I don't know. It's a week on Sunday, guys.
Yeah,
it's
I know.
A week on Sunday. And this is close to the line.
I'm thinking that they have painted themselves into such a corner and that part of the pushback is they've already sold the ads, right? Mm. So they've got these things slotted. Now, I'm not saying that you can't change things, right?
I don't think we would see that kind of pushback of people retracting their ads because the ads are bought, the ads are done, their traffic, their log, that's fine.
No, I'm just talking from a timing standpoint.
Yeah.
So if they already have the ads slotted and they've already accounted for taking out these categories to fit in the ads, right?
They can shove it with VT.
It would be... Like,
they could fill it with VT.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they can't change it. But it's just an odd thing to push back on because when it came to best blockbuster picture, Okay, we're pushing back on that.
Yeah.
What was the other dopey decision? Oh, the host, no host thing. That
then
was,
the no musical
the
numbers.
The no. Oh, we're only going to do two of the
now
five.
Now we have all the musical
now
numbers.
Now they're all back in.
I mean, I think it'd be really interesting. This we often see sort of the red carpet reflecting the issue. I think it'd be really interesting to see this year if there are people who decide actually they don't go to the Oscars this year.
I don't think that's going
to
happen.
I don't think it'll happen, but I'd be very interested to see if it does. I just think it's a very odd year for the Oscars. I'm not going to be on the red carpet this year. I'm going to be at the Vanity Fair party afterwards talking to the winners. Nice. But yeah. I mean, it sounds glamorous. I'm going to be standing up for 9 hours waiting for everybody to come in after they've won and they've had their champagne and they're a little bit tired and they don't want to talk. So it sounds glamorous, but the reality is not that glamorous.
Hey, would you just allow me to live like just allow me the
okay.
dream.
But, just being honest.
But you know, it's gonna be really interesting because I am gonna be asking people about this and finding out what they feel about it. See how this goes.
Too. Do you think that people will use do you think some of the people who either on the red carpet or if they win an award will bring this up? I mean, I think they will. I think certain people might do that. We bring up other political issues. They might, you know, as collaborative efforts say, hey, you know.
It depends who it is and who, right. you know, and what they're affiliated with. That's the way I feel about it.
We'll see what happens. I mean, let's wrap up this topic because we have a lot to get through today. Ashley Menzel. Good morning, Ashley. saying, I was just excited to hear Simon say Fishman Dildo. Yeah. Of course, Fishman Dildo is a Marvel superhero with a standalone project coming very soon.
Yep.
Moving on, Ryan Johnson is still working. sorry, is he DC? Is he DCEU? I don't know. Maybe he's Aquaman's friend.
Yeah.
Joel Aquaman.
Yeah, he's getting a spin-off.
He's getting a spin-off. Fishman Dildo. There you go. Do you know what? I'd watch that. Ryan Johnson is still working on his own Star Wars trilogy, contrary to rumours otherwise. This was a story that hit this week. Someone who is not a professional heard something which was incorrect and posted it online.
When he was sitting at a Panera Bread
Then other people saw it and then repeated it. And it became a thing. And then Ryan Johnson, basically the story was Ryan Johnson is no longer going to be making this Star Wars trilogy. They published this. We've heard. This wasn't true. And Ryan Johnson said, this is not true. I'm still continuing with this. And it was like, sorry, bro. The problem is a rumor is not a rumor if it is not true. It is an untruth. It is something that is not real. It is a lie. To then continue to classify it and republish it and say it's a rumor. A rumor is something that may or may not be true. When you know that it is not true, then it is not a rumor. It is something that is not true. It's really simple. We, and I've touched on this before, are living in a really dangerous age in journalism where while being able to publish on any platform gives you the opportunity to find a voice and create a voice, that doesn't make you a professional. That doesn't make you a journalist. There is a lot of this going on. And also, just copying and rewriting what other people have written, that also doesn't make you a journalist. That's just regurgitation.
Right.
That's, you know, that is recycling information. That is not making you a journalist. And we're seeing a lot of this in the industry right now. I think it's setting a very dangerous and shoddy precedent, to be honest with you. Also, when you give credence to stuff that isn't true. Guys, when you heard this week, what did you make of it? Obviously, the story is the fact that Ryan Johnson is still working on the Star Wars trilogy.
But that is not a story. My initial reaction is, no way this is true.
Yeah.
I have no doubt that this is a false story and that this rumor is going to be false because there's no way he would turn down this much money.
Money.
Dimitri, you're...
No, I mean, I just think it's not just journalism. It's like people can get up and say anything. And if they're in any kind of a position, it doesn't even have to be huge power, limited power, whatever. And they could say things like inoculation is bad and people believe it. So it's just the society of today. Journalism gets hit because it is so easily accessible. And then once it hits the clicks in the internet, and then people will tend to believe rather than to try to doubt it, right? Because somebody may have said it, and they go, oh, well, then it must be true.
And there are people who wanted to believe it true because they didn't like The Last Jedi.
Right.
So it was a fuck you to Rian Johnson.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
and
right.
It fits into their gestalt of how they're thinking of where Star Wars should go, even though you make the movie. Nobody's asking you to make the movie. So we are living in these strange, dangerous times where people can get away with saying untruths and have people believe them. And it's, you know, I'm fine with Rian Johnson going on with it. It makes sense. Like, why wouldn't he? It's too bad that they was kind of put in this position where they had to say, no, no, no. But then you wonder, well, it's already out there. Who didn't hear about the Disney press, Rian Johnson coming out? No, actually, I am. So there are still some schmucks out there, I believe, who are saying, hey, did you hear Rian Johnson?
No, I saw it just last night.
People stop at the truth that they want to know.
Correct.
They want to stop at the truth that they want to know. That's the convenient truth. Or they don't. Constantly, I get people saying to me, it's like, oh, I heard they're doing a Back to the Future 4 because there were constantly rumors. There's not going to be a Back to the Future 4. There's not going to be a reboot of Back to the Future. Right. But they read it and they'd be like, I'm going to stop here. Here is my truth.
Right. That's it. I'm not going to go beyond it.
Yeah. But I mean, this is someone referred to Twitter on Wednesday night when this story broke as being a hellscape. It was. I mean, I was, what little hair I have, I was pulling out because it just totally makes a mockery of what it means to actually be a journalist. Completely makes a mockery.
To your point, though, like,
it's like, you know, just before I hand to you, it's like when people say, oh, anybody, it's like a criticism against me, anybody can be a critic. Just means you have an opinion. It doesn't make you a critic any more than I can cook food. It doesn't make me a chef.
And here's the other thing, too. Did that person come out and apologize?
No, of course not.
Well, I mean, there was an apology and said, well, it turns out we were wrong. We shouldn't have done it. But it's like... Right.
But to Simon's point, it's just like... Yeah. It's just... We let this snowball.
Yeah.
And it just keeps snowballing. And, like, what's really problematic in my eyes is the types of outlets that picked this up. This didn't just go from a small little outlet. It went to major outlets.
Yeah. And this is another problem. If you pay peanuts, you get monkeys. And the industry is littered, and I've said this before, with hobbyists. Now, there is a difference between someone who wants to get a job and learn the trade, and it's difficult. I'm not going to say it's easy. But, you know, I like to cook. It doesn't mean I should open a restaurant. You know, I wasn't good enough to study to be a doctor. I also didn't want to be a doctor. But it's like, I didn't just open my own GP surgery. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right. And let me
and
ask,
it's killing the industry.
But the outlets that picked it up, right, in part, would you agree? Like, you have an outlet. You work for many outlets.
Many outlets.
Right?
And those of which would have covered this story without getting any fucking proof that it was true.
Right. That's exactly where I was going.
I would be fired, and that's because I'm a professional. And if I pulled that shit, I'd be out of my ear.
Right. That's exactly what I was getting at. You would vet it in one way, shape, or form.
It's the difference between being a professional and playing. It's the difference.
But you said major outlets picked this up.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
So what?
Even to dismiss it, to go, here's a thing that's not true, and yet
because
we're going to run it.
Because they want that clickbait.
It's clicking.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And we need a line needs to be drawn somewhere with quality. And we're going to return to that later on in another topic later. Let's move on to a Red Sonja movie put on hold in the wake of the recent Bryan Singer allegations.
Didn't see that coming.
I have to say, I'm a little bit surprised that it took so long for this to come out. We'll talk about this, and I'm going to go back to the chat for a few things. I mean, it was no real surprise this week. Why do you think it took, what was it, 2 or 3 weeks?
I was actually surprised they were going forward with a Red Sonja movie.
Well, I mean, yeah,
it did. Were they waiting for the BAFTAs to be over? Like, I don't know. I was just a little bit surprised, but I'm not surprised that this happened.
No,
I'm not surprised by this at all. Do you think the film's now dead, or they will just move him off it, and then the project will come?
They're
going
to give it some time.
And then they'll
probably bring it back up again.
Okay.
I just think they'll hire another director.
Yeah,
I mean, number
but
one,
give it some time. They can't just like throw him out right now and just be like, "Hey, you're taking over for him," because that's just going to cause backlash.
I think you're right, but on that point, who's going to want to take this on? Because when you're attached to a project, it's like we've seen this with Bohemian Rhapsody. you know, whether you like it or not, Bryan Singer is still associated to that movie.
Right.
And the thing is, it's like this movie, it's like after we saw the Weinstein situation, movies that then had a Weinstein tag or were Weinstein and then sold to... Great example, Paddington 2 was a Weinstein Company movie, which then went to Warner Brothers. There is a contingent who are like, that was still, it was a former, you know, it's like right. It's like Dirty Pants, you know? You know, when you know the stain was there. You know you had that ketchup stain on your pants.
Oh, is that what that is?
Jesus Christ, man. It's Friday morning. That's me saying that, by the way. But yeah, you've got a ketchup stain on your pants. And you know, it's almost gone, but you know you had the stain on the pants.
Right.
Stained pants!
Yes.
How far along in this movie are they?
I'm assuming not that far.
Right.
I mean, also, I want to just bring up to your point, too. I mean, The Upside did fairly well, and that was a Weinstein film. And then there's that poor Benedict Cumberbatch movie that no one should ever see, period.
Right.
That'll never come out, ever, because it's a piece of shit.
Well, The Upside, too. That was good... Yeah, I mean, there is a marketing potential there that STX had.
Yeah.
And I know it became
their biggest
move,
like one of their biggest releases.
And they're going to make the least amount of money off it because it was a distribution deal.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, they've still got Happy Time Murders.
Oh.
Nothing Happy Time.
Too soon.
No, it's never too soon to bounce.
Let's look in the chat. We're going back to what we were just talking about with Rian Johnson. Ashley Menzel say, preach, Simon. Oh, I will preach. Scott Boswell, I checked. It was a documentary. Okay. Colin, you can't accept, you can't claim it's a false rumor until he actually makes the trilogy. He's making the trilogy. The thing is that what they reported was not true, is that he has left that project. He hasn't left that project. What they said was untrue. That is what is untrue. Ashley Menzel, I'd rather have a lobotomy than watch another Star Wars film. Eon001, Ryan can make a good film in the Star Wars universe. Just give him some original characters to play with and not the beloved ones. Zeno Hour saying, Simon, more upset and frustrated with outlets who spread this rumour, like it was a fact than I am with Super Bro Movies' inexcusable reporting. Yeah, I mean, I'm pissed that it's something that you don't report something that's not true.
No.
Or you quantify it in some way, but you have to have some basis. There was no basis in truth or fact that what they were saying was true. And that's different to, you know, a rumor which may or may not be true. It simply wasn't true. They didn't check it, and that's why this is different. Journalism is different to what is happening there. Carlito Lee, the moment he doesn't make that trilogy, everyone will come back to the moment. Yeah. But that's in the future. At this point, what they said was untrue. You can't say, well, you know, we can maybe change. You know, you can update a story. And if he decides to leave the project at some point, that's different to saying he's left the project. He hasn't left the project. That is inaccurate. If I reported that on any of my professional outlets, that would be considered something that was untrue. I was publishing it. I would be fired. I wouldn't go, well, maybe he'll leave the project in the future. And then my boss would turn around and go, maybe. You can keep your job. It's not how it works. Mm. Zeno Hour Super Bro Movies did apologize. They did apologize, yes. But to be honest with you, they had no business in this. Ashley Menzel, the death of journalism at the hand of getting clips and clicks and retweets. Absolutely. That's what we're seeing these days. Zias Bilou, the worst ones I've seen on YouTube killing the industry, names a couple of outlets, which I won't do, as I think that's slightly unfair. This is a very specific case. Zeno Hour, as someone who works in the web, clickbait is actually terrible SEO. Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. What if Rian Johnson isn't to direct the newest Star Wars trilogy, but still a part of the project as EP and use his script? Not saying the rumor was true, but what if? But again, that's speculation.
Right.
Someone reported something as being true when it wasn't true. You can't take something and go, well, the maybes, because that's not how journalism works.
And the only thing that we know that's true right now within the Star Wars universe is that... Episode 9 is coming out, for sure. And that the subsequent spinoff movies have been have been put on indefinite hold.
Yeah.
We're not getting a Boba Fett. We're not getting an Obi-Wan Kenobi. Pretty sure not getting another Solo. Yeah. Those movies are put in the back burner, but they are still continuing to go forward per Kathleen Kennedy.
No, I was waiting for the R2-D2 origin story, and yes. I'm really sad that I'm not getting one.
Well, we need to move on for this because we have other things to talk about. But basically, the fact is, when you say a story, you don't publish a story in the chance that it might become true at one point. That's not what we do. Otherwise, I could go online today and say, let's say, Kevin Hart is remaking. I've heard a rumor that Kevin Hart is remaking Toy Soldiers, and it's also going to star Ben Affleck and Anne Hathaway. Now,
really,
in 15 years' time. If Kevin Hart remakes Small Soldiers, that also happens to star Anne Hathaway, and who else was it? What I mentioned?
Ben Affleck.
Then fine, but what I just said is not true.
Right.
That's the difference between fact-based journalism and making shit up. That's the difference. Okay, so Aladdin this week. I'm sorry, it's been a very, very frustrating week this week in the industry. Aladdin TV spot revealed Will Smith as the big blue genie. There were complaints when Will Smith was shown as not being the big blue genie. And then there were complaints when Will Smith was shown as the big blue genie.
How about
discuss, guys. Over to you.
How about the simple fact that it just looks like Will Smith playing the big blue genie? Yeah. That he doesn't disguise his voice, that he just looks like Will Smith. It's very disturbing. Suicide Squad. Weird.
Yeah.
When
is that bubble going to pop for them? Like this remaking.
I don't know.
Guy Ritchie, that's what.
You know, I just.
But the bubble, to be honest with you, the bubble has kind of burst a couple of times because there are a couple of these live action remakes that haven't done stellar box office. One that immediately comes to mind is Pete's Dragon.
Okay.
Which did fine. It didn't do amazing. When you compare the likes of Cinderella, which did well, but didn't do business that they were expecting. And then you have the likes of the Beauty and the Beasts,
right?
Which did exceptionally, and the Maleficence, which did particularly well. I mean,
but Pete's Dragon wasn't amazing, completely animated, by the way. Right? And so, but I'm just like, when I saw the trailer for Aladdin, okay, so the Lion King trailer, a lot of people got very emotional about. It's the opening scene, looks fine, looks great. Okay, Jungle Book was actually really well done too, but this one right here, number one. It ain't Robin Williams, and that frantic ad lib that he added to that. I don't know. It just didn't. Yeah, I wasn't excited.
Scott Mendelson posted about this that he should never have taken on this role, and I completely agree because, I mean, to live up to Robin Williams is just not going to happen. Yeah. And you know, I feel. You know, despite my feelings...
You're damned if you do, because if you try and do a Robin Williams, it's like you're just copying Robin Williams.
But
if you don't, you're not Robin Williams.
But then it's also hard because, like, not every single one of these Disney movies needs to get this live-action remake treatment.
Yeah.
And that's becoming... You know, every time I see a news story, it's like, oh, they're thinking about redoing Lilo and Stitch, Lady and the Tramp. It's like everything that they want to remake, it's like maybe some of these work best in animated form.
It's what made Disney,
right.
Number one, and they don't have to. It's actually, for me anyways, because they have a lineup of films that are coming out. They're not even waiting for, they're not waiting for Dumbo to come out before they've announced 10 of these things already.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily need Hunchback of Notre Dame to be turned into live action.
And they can't even do that one right. I mean, going back to that, I mean, the original source material for that is not something that works well for Disney.
Yeah.
It's something that should be an R-rated film, not a freaking Disney-fied PG movie.
I mean, I'm still hopeful that Aladdin's going to be good, but I'll be honest with you, it's not it's not pushing my buttons right now.
No.
It looks fine. I mean, I know some people are really tired.
I don't think it looks that bad. But it's like,
but it doesn't certainly when you compare it to say something like Dumbo, where I'm like, that actually looks like it could be pretty magical.
I can't wait for Dumbo.
But you know what? It doesn't hurt. And all studios have this. Sometimes they have massive hits, and sometimes they have bombs or things that underperform. And that's fine. Disney had a couple of bombs last year. They also had a couple of massive hits. And this year they're going to have more massive hits and a couple...
Wah-whaps.
Yeah. That's the way... But you know what?
It's the business.
Not every movie can be a hit.
No.
That's just the way it is.
But the way that they're playing the game today...
Mm.
Is that they're mitigating that, and that's why we're moving towards this way of less variety, because they don't want to take a risk in doing a smaller movie. It's what I was saying to early on past shows regarding the Disney Fox merger, right?
Yeah.
Disney would have never released Bohemian Rhapsody. It's not in their wheelhouse. Mm. So with Fox going away,
Disney wouldn't, as it currently stands. I think previous incarnations of Disney would, and I think we...
In the 80s and 90s, yes, but not today.
With the Fox-Disney merger, I think we're going to see a little bit more of the emergence of the... Going back to the Hollywood studios and the Buena Vistas, but as its current status, you are right.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that Disney itself, they're going to keep the Fox Searchlight. Mm. So we'll get those Fox Searchlight movies because Disney forgot how to release those kind of movies. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to get the variety, cultural kind of movies that Fox released and distributed. So that to me, that's just a tiny reason why I'm really upset about the Fox merger, because of what Fox's output was added to the variety of for moviegoers and for cinema in general, and that's going to go away substantially.
I get that. I think there are pros and cons to the Disney-Fox merger. I'm still a little bit on the fence. I mean, I'm not overly happy about it, but you know what? It doesn't make any difference because they're doing
it.
I'm not going to lose sleep over it because I have no control over it.
I get it.
I think what you've said is absolutely right. But, I still have a little bit of hope that I think actually this will... It'll give Disney back, as you say, they forgot to release how to release some of these movies. I think it'll give them a little bit of this, and I'm not saying Disney is spineless because they're not, but it'll stiffen the spine a bit. I think they know that they have these markets that they will now have control over, where they, if they wanted to take a risk with something, then they have an avenue to take a risk with it.
This is what I agree with you 100% and your point as well. And what I think... What is missing from the Disney model right now is that I'm thinking back to the 90s and early 2000s when they had movies like Father of the Bride and things of that nature that weren't attached to this product bullshit, where it wasn't like, hey, how can we sell this and this and this?
And they're aimed at that middle area in movies that are not the big blockbusters and they're not the indies, which we don't see a huge amount of these days, or they kind of get a bit
and
lost.
Bigger. Yeah, and you almost wonder how. I mean, both of these movies did exceptionally well, like The Greatest Showman or Bohemian Rhapsody. I wonder what they would have done box office if they were actually at Disney.
You look at some of the stuff that they released previously. I mean, like Pretty Woman.
Yeah,
you know, was a Buena Vista.
Right.
Yeah. Rated R. Yeah. Was not expected to be what it became.
But when you looked at Disney in the 80s and the 90s, right?
We're getting slightly off topic.
But my point is, and I'm. You had Outrageous Fortune. You had Down and Out in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
These were not what you would consider the family fare, right? Mm. But a lot has changed. And going back to the original point, which is they are in the business, as a lot of studios today, on mitigating the risk. They don't want to take risk. They say no. They've always said no, but now they say it with a lot more frequency because they don't want to take the risk and lose the money. If they can lose the money on a bigger film, right? The next big film will come out to help mitigate that, and then you got home video.
Right.
But that's why these middle movies are going away.
Yeah. And Disney knows what they're doing with that, too. Because essentially, whenever they have, you can always pay close attention to this. If Disney has two releases pretty close within a couple weeks of one another, they know that one of these is not as good as the other one.
Yep.
and that they're always they can rely on, like, hey, but we can only have this in the conversation for a couple
weeks.
But you
know why that happens, too, right? Because they know they have the dog and they have the hammer, yeah, right? So they can go to an exhibitor, unless you play this dog, you ain't going to get the hammer.
Right. Yeah.
And they're like, so I'm stuck with this Four Realms movie.
But also, you know, the thing is that also along with that, and we need to move on, but there is also the opportunity now that they have these sidings they can push these movies into. Rather than theatrically release them, you have the Disney Pluses of the world, you have the Netflixes, you have the Amazons. So you have, I think that's part of the problem with these middling movies, but again, we've got completely off topic,
right,
is we have this siding where you can put these projects, that are those really important middle movies, that used to be called sleeper hits if they landed well,
yeah,
you know, and I think that's difficult as well. But Aladdin, Will Smith is a big blue genie. Little boy blue.
He needed the money.
Some chats. Zeno Hour breaking news. Simon is reporting Kevin Hart and Anne Hathaway in Ben Affleck's NC-17 The Toy remake, which will be part of the DCEU. Think you'll find it was Toy Soldiers. It's going to be a hit.
Small Soldiers, like, by actually, the way.
I like the toy.
Ashley Menzel on the genie. Does anyone remember Face from Nickelodeon? That's what the genie reminds me of. Someone put his face on a flat surface, or like in the Haunted Mansion ride that projected faces onto globes. Still does. It's one of my favourite little niche parts of that ride. By the way, what happened to the Haunted Mansion movie?
Yeah, ask Guillermo del Toro, because he was supposed to be making it.
I still want to see that. Eon 001, Will Smith should have made Hancock 2 instead of this. Come on, man! Been waiting for over 10 years. Senor Nerd, yeah, I mean, I love Hancock. The favourite meme from the Aladdin trailer reaction is side-by-side comparison of Will Smith's genie and Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen, with the caption, one of these movies came out in 2009. Fair. I also seen comparisons with Arrested Development, yes, and various other things as well, which is quite good. It's all about the cash. All about the cash. That from Wellington's Smithopolis. Yeah, absolutely. So many things on this. Zeno, very quickly. So am I the only one who isn't that bothered by Will Smith's genie? No, we're not particularly bothered by Will Smith's genie. I mean, it's not good, but it's not the disaster people are saying it is. I'm still looking forward to seeing the movie, I'll be honest with you. We're going to move on from this to another story this week that has been kind of rattling around somewhere in the middle and getting a lot of reaction from people in the industry. About Brie Larson doing the press tour for Captain Marvel. She has made it known previously, and something that we've supported and something we do support on the show, to do with more representation in the industry, and that's something she's pushing for. But what is happening at the moment is she is predominantly asking, or we are led to believe that this is coming from her. It could be coming from other members of the team. We don't know exactly. But it's got Bree's fingerprints on it. For the press tour of Captain Marvel, she is pushing for predominantly female journalists to do the junket interviews, because there are lots of white men in the industry, and she wants to address that. This is, as someone who is an advocate for more representation with the industry, it is something we need, very much so. On this show, I'm consistently trying to get women to come on the panel. We have a few who come on a regular basis, and we thank Kit and others for that. And I also push for journalists of colour to come in and take part in the show and discuss. Just to diversify, not because we're talking about a movie this week about women, let's get a woman, or, oh, we're talking about a movie that's predominantly about Hispanics, let's get a Hispanic journalist on. You know, that is not why I do it, because I don't think that helps. What can happen with this kind of thing is you create a false positive where, for that moment, for that product, you create an equality, you create an image, you create a vision. If that is not sustained, that is nothing more than tokenism, and that doesn't help. One of the other big problems we have in the industry in this day and age is people not being paid, or certainly paid fairly, for something, if they are considered to do it at a professional level by an outlet, is being paid. And what I would also like to see, I support Brie in bringing equality, more representation in the industry, but that's not a standalone issue. And what we're also having at the moment, and I realise that speaking as a white male of a certain age in the industry, who's been doing this for 25 years, I have never, and if someone can prove otherwise, I will give them $100. that any of the jobs that I have been given, whether that's freelance or staff, I have been given because I'm a white male. Any interview I have ever been granted is because of my colour or because of my sex. It's because I'm the right tool for the job. And I've earned my stripes. Now, we do need to bring more people in. We need to have a bigger pool of representation. For me, I don't think, while it looks good, it creates a false positive, and it's little more than a visual, because all these people that are going to be asked to cover this junket, what happens at the next junket? Do they continue to have a job? Are they being paid to do this job? So what I would employ Brie Larson to do, I support her in this in principle. I think it actually creates as much division as it creates inclusivity. So I don't think it's the ultimate solution. What I would also like her to do is look at not having outlets who don't pay their staff. Fair pay. If you want to have equality, then you have to have equality in pay. Don't give time to outlets that don't pay their staff. That's really important. Full disclosure, I don't get paid for doing this, but this is my choice. This is something I love doing. It is, call it a hobby, but you guys seem to enjoy the show, so I continue to do it. That is my choice. This is not my day job. This is not my profession. It is a small part of what I do. But if I think she wants to see some real progress in the industry, that also needs to be taken into effect. Guys, what do you feel about this?
If I may...
And I realise that we're a panel of three middle-aged white men. Well, I'm entirely aware of that.
But I'm going to... I have to talk about our colleague here, Scott, because you're founder of the LAOFCS,
yeah.
Right?
Great point.
And Simon and I... It was a pleasure and honor to have been invited to your awards ceremony. Your entire mandate for LAOFCS was to shake things up within Los Angeles and accept more diversity. And you had this, it was truly, folks, it really was a wonderful award show. And you don't have to listen to me, because Brie Larson was actually there. And I heard, and she's full of charisma. She's as beautiful in real life as you see her in pictures and on screen. And she gave a really impassioned speech while having fun. And there was a camaraderie between you two. And the thing that she said, and she tweeted the next day, was about the LAOFCS and its diversity and how happy she was and proud to have been given this award from this organization, right? And it was a really great moment.
A trailblazer for inclusion, yeah.
Correct, right? So when I hear it, and she tweeted the next day, and I thought it was amazing. I think it's such a milestone, and you should be so proud. But to hear this, right, after that speech, in a way, this is not inclusion. Like, you want everybody to be, you want diversity. Mm. And I understand women, but you have the women there, sure. But there are many male aspects of the LAOFCS who have, many who are from diversity, whether it be race, religion, color. And that sort of kind of took away a little bit of the thunder of that wonderful evening, because her wanting to include LAOFCS, I thought, was something that was so amazing that she pointed it out. Mm. And now it's almost like, well, now I'm going to hand select people from not only the LAOFCS, but here and there and everywhere.
And the reason it works with the LAOFCS NMNOP is the fact that it's organic. You never pick anybody to be a member of that organization because of their sex or the color of their skin or their sexuality. You pick them. That will be an additional factor, but you pick them because they're good at what they do, because it should be about if you're good. And I had a conversation with, I was at a pre-Grammys event last week with, and it was to celebrate women in the industry. And there was one of the women there who was an activist for inclusion. and was saying it is a very difficult precedent that's being set at the moment in some part of the discussion, which is a big discussion. It is not a binary discussion. There are a lot of pieces of this jigsaw. By the fact that while we are advocates for inclusivity,
yeah.
It's when you want to be treated the same, to then continually point out your difference isn't helpful. That's why we don't have, you know, awards for female actors, awards for male actors. We have within the Oscars, best actor, best actress, that's fine. But we don't have separate award ceremony because that's not helpful. Because that's not a realistic pool. You have to have the people who are the best people for the job. I have never recruited anyone because of their colour of their skin or because of their sex or gender, whichever way you want to classify yourself, sexuality, whatever. I have never, and I will never do that. Recently, I have put a number of people forward for very good jobs in the industry. They happen to be women, people of colour, LGBTQ members of the community. But I didn't put them forward for those jobs because of those factors. Right. It's because they are the people that I believe are best for that job. And I pride myself on promoting that inclusivity and being a part of doing that.
Right.
But I don't... If you create a false positive and tokenism, that doesn't help the industry and it doesn't help the individual. How would you feel
help the business either.
If I got a job going, well, you know, Dave is not white and he's the best person for the job, but we're giving it to you because you're white. I would have to go to work every single day knowing that I wasn't the best person for that job.
Right.
The only reason I got that job was because of the colour of my skin. I don't. That's not helpful to anybody. The message is a sincere and a good one and a clear one. We just have to make sure it's done right. And I have to say, I don't think this is doing it right. I would be more than happy to continue to be an advocate and to help Brie on this. Absolutely, more than happy to. But I don't think this is the way to do it, Scott. Sorry.
All right. No. You know, first I want
but
to say...
But I say that because I'm a white man and a middle-aged man. And this isn't a boo-hoo pity party for white middle-class males.
I want to first and foremost thank you guys for the kind words.
You do a great job.
Yeah,
I try. And I mean, the thing is...
And she pointed that out.
Yeah.
You know.
I'm not going to lie about this. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it. When I initially read this story that broke, and I think it was like on Monday or Tuesday, I was sort of taken back by it a little bit. And the thing is, I don't need to defend myself here. My work in this industry has proven, whether it's on We Live Entertainment with the people who I've hired to write for the site or the creation of LAOFCS, that I believe in diversity and equality and quality people who work hard and bust their freaking asses to do what they love.
And they do.
But when I read this, I was a little taken back by it because I think what this is saying is essentially we want to single out people. Mm. And whether or not it's the intention, and I fully believe, obviously,
I don't believe that is the intention.
No, I don't think it's
the
intention either. And I think a lot of people are taking it in that way. Like a lot of people are very upset.
No.
I mean, I read through a ton of tweets that went on about how Brie Larson is sexist and racist and all this stuff, and I do not feel that way.
No.
I've met her multiple times. She is very genuine and a heartfelt person, and she's trying to do what's right. Mm-hmm. But the problem,
which we support,
which we 100% support, but the thing that's constantly becoming an issue in this industry, and has been an issue in this industry, is putting people in boxes.
Yeah.
And saying that one person or one group of people should be getting some, you know, special treatment over another. It's not. What we should all be fighting for is equality. We should be all of us should be in the room. And someone pointed out in the chat that, like, they're not worried about the smaller outlets who have minority writers and voices. That is 100% true. You know, they're not reaching out to those people either.
Yeah.
So essentially, if you really want to find a solution to this, I think, and what I love about Brie Larson is that she's all about conversation. She said it in our
very thing. Much so.
She doesn't want to be asked questions. She wants to have a conversation. She wants to know how you feel about something, and I think it would have been really interesting instead of doing press conferences for this movie coming up, if Brie Larson sat in various roundtables with a bunch of people and just talked about the industry.
Yeah.
It would have been so refreshing to actually take away from the movie a little bit, because you are promoting the movie by doing this. But, like, to actually sit down and say, hey, put a white guy, put a black guy, put a gay guy, put, you know, whatever, you know, Latino woman, Latino man, and sit them all on a round table and say, okay, guys, we're going to have a conversation.
Yeah.
What's wrong with the industry? How do you think we can fix this?
People in the chat are saying, Mark Bullum saying, good for you, Simon, but everyone isn't you. No, absolutely. But do you know what? I started in exactly the same place as these people who are trying to get into the industry. And I've been doing this for 25 years. And like I say, there's a lot of talk about, you know, and I understand that there is a lot of white male privilege. But
there is.
I have never been given a job because I'm a white male in my profession. I simply haven't. And I've always worked in environments in the industry that are heavily, you know, if not 50-50, very close to being representative of different ethnicities, different sexes and sexualities. And I continue to do so.
Right.
Don't forget that what you necessarily see in front of the camera isn't, again, the whole story. I work with outlets where people go, oh, my God, you know, everything on screen is so white. One of my outlets that I work with, you never see us on screen. You never see us on screen. So you don't know who is asking those questions. And do you know why? Because it doesn't matter. Because if you're in that position to be in that room, you should be there because you are the best person to be in that room. There are accusations that, well, people get, if you're a white male, you instantly get access to things. I work with some of the biggest outlets in the world, and I have done over my 20 plus year career. That does not guarantee you anything. I get turned down for stuff all the time. Not once, and these are by people I don't know, not once has my color of my skin or my sex come into it. There'll be some others. They just don't want to talk to me.
Right.
There seems to be a bit of a misconception that, you know, people like me get some of this stuff handed to them on the platter. That's not true. A lot of it is down to the brand of the company that you work with. And I'll tell you something for nothing is that when you leave that brand, those calls dry up.
Yes. Yes.
Those calls dry up.
Yep.
And you don't get invited to screenings. And you don't get invited to junkets. Do not be under any illusion that if you are a white man in the industry and you lose your job, Disney are offering you screenings, or Warner are offering you screenings, or Universal are offering you screenings, because they don't. Because it's about your work and who you work for.
You are off that list.
You so are fast. Off that list quicker than you can fucking say off that list.
And that, I mean, thank you for bringing that up. I mean, this brings up the point of qualification. And people, you know, having to prove their worth in the industry and the way that the entire system is set up is wrong. Mm. I mean, like you were just saying, if someone leaves Entertainment Tonight and is an amazing talent and knows their shit, they should not lose the ability to go to another outlet or do their own thing just because they don't work at Entertainment Tonight. That's not fair. And they've proven that they're quality, and they've proven that they're knowledgeable. And that's why I think this is such a bigger issue, is that there's a level of, you can't do segregation. It's bad. You got to.
If it was the other way, where somebody turned around and said, I only want male journalists at a junket, there would be mayhem. And rightly
no,
so.
I'm not going to expose who this was who told me this, but I heard that there is an agency here in L.A. that caters to minorities who also send out an email for this film and was suggesting that if they would prefer if females go. And this is going out to minorities. So that, to me, again, and that's not... That has nothing on Brie. Mm. That's on the agency.
Yeah.
And for them to say that, to already take a class of people that are not getting the type of exposure that they deserve.
Yeah.
And to say, you know what, we're going to twinkle it down a little bit more and you get even less.
For inclusivity, let's get super niche.
Yeah.
It's not helpful.
It's not helpful.
Now, I mean, we need to move on from this because I don't want this to become, you know, it's and this is very much not a boo-hoo poor white man. You know, but I just think that there are a lot of facts. It's not binary. It's not zeros and ones. There's a lot of things that have to be discussed in this. And I absolutely, as an advocate for it, applaud Brie's intentions and attempts and mission to increase inclusivity and representation within the industry. I just don't think that this binary solution is something that would make long-term difference or is perhaps the right way to do it. And I said to you guys over breakfast this morning, and I'm not going to name the person, but there's someone within our film community who it was incessantly, and I understand the anger and I understand the frustration, that was attacking men in the industry, especially people like me and you guys, white middle-aged men in the industry, how terrible we are and how we get everything that we want, and then emailed me for help. That's, do you know what? I'm not saying you've attacked who I am, so I'm not going to help you. But that's not the way to do it. We're here to help, and I push for inclusivity. Don't smack me in the face when I try to do it. It's a big conversation. Can we work on this together rather than in opposition and exclusion? That doesn't get us to the end game, the end result that we are all looking for. Equal parity of pay in the industry and better representation.
Equal parity.
That's the end game.
Yeah, and like I said at breakfast too, we here, and I believe many male in our audiences as well,
yeah,
we're good. I think we're gentlemen. Like we don't disrespect. We
joke
around a lot with each other. We don't disrespect women. We want to advocate this sort of thing.
100%.
But we've said this before. Just because a movie may have an all female cast, I can't go in. Like if the movie isn't good, doesn't mean that it's going to be a bad movie. Yeah. It could be a bad movie.
We're going to move on. I very briefly want to touch on the big movie that's coming out this week very quickly. But Eon 001 is saying exactly why I feel there should be more diverse panels discussing this. Women's experiences are different. Absolutely. However, when you accuse another group of something, you have to have a right to reply, mm-hmm. because men's experience of this and women's experience of this are very different. So let's talk about this together, not in separate rooms. And
absolutely.
We continue to encourage and welcome people of different sexes, orientations, and ethnicities on this show. We want more of that. We actively push for it. People sometimes aren't available, and some people don't want to do it.
Just one last thing.
Yeah.
I mean, my opinion on this, again, is my opinion. And I'm for everyone. I just think that qualifications and worrying about equality are very, very important. And I think that's what we should be doing together. And I do, and I said it at the award ceremony, and I appreciate what Brie has done to open doors for more women and people of color.
We support
at film festivals. I think it's so incredibly important. Same thing with Jessica Chastain. Same thing with Tessa Thompson, who came and did that challenge for the more female filmmakers.
Sure.
I support this 100 and like 50%.
Yep.
All I'm saying is that in order to make change, I think everyone needs to be a part of that change, yep. and we all have to have that conversation. It has to be an open communication.
Look at it big picture.
Absolutely.
Big picture. Absolutely. Guys, we have to wrap up, but very quickly, a couple of movies out this week. Alita Battle Angel, which we discussed recently. Isn't It Romantic? And Happy Death Day 2, which is already out in theaters, a three-day weekend here in the
all
US.
Of them are out of theaters.
Yeah, they're all out in theaters. Happy Death Day 2. Okay, very quickly. I'll be honest with you, I loved Happy Death Day. I really love that movie. This, for me, it was a 2 out of 5. It changes the tone quite a lot, even though it was a mix of slasher and comedy for the first one. Now it's a mix of comedy and slasher. A lot of things didn't add up for me in this. It didn't feel as cohesive and solid and complicated, yes. As well thought out, no. Although, lead star, Jessica, again, phenomenal. I absolutely think she's amazing. And if you see this movie for one reason, go and see it for her, because she is one of the best talents that Hollywood has right now. And I have no idea why they're using her more. Scott.
I agree with you. I think I'm a little bit higher on this one, but I just felt it was bloated. It was messy. It takes certain ideas and like introduces them and then does nothing with them. Just feels like, and it's weird for me to say this, it felt a little too ambitious for its own good, and that they didn't spend enough time, you know, kind of tying up certain storylines and just throwing them in to be clever. And after a while, it just kept going and going and going. It's like the last act just like felt like it was never ending, and they just kept tying things together. And But at the end of the day, it was a decent sequel, but definitely a step down from the first.
I really enjoyed it. I would.
You're paid by Blumhouse to say that.
I wish.
Blumhouse Corner, by the way.
I wish I was paid by Blumhouse. I actually really liked it. I thought it was a major risk. Yes, tonally they did change the movie, but they changed it from being a hack and slash movie, but I felt it was actually a lot more heartfelt. Yes, I felt the comedy was very funny, but I also felt that had an emotional heft that you don't get in horror sequels, horror movies in general. We actually, the baby doll killer here is a MacGuffin. This is Tree's story. This is about the choices. This is a horror movie that has themes of second chances in life. This is about coping with loss. What do I stay here? Do I go? Like, what do I do? And that, to me, I felt, wow, that's a bold move, because that doesn't happen in horror movies. And I appreciated it for what it was. Jessica Roth's performance was even better this time around. They gave her more to do. I'm a really big fan of the movie. And thus far, the series. So
yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure they'll do Happy Death Day 3 or Hap 3 Death Day. I'm sure that's going to happen. And everybody seems quite happy with this movie. But, I mean, for me, it didn't quite work. But, guys, we've literally run out of time. We're trying to bend it. Doesn't work. trying to bend it. Make it last longer. Doesn't happen. Dimitri, who are you? Where can we find you?
Right here in Popcorn Talks, Meet the Movie Press, and with Anatomy of a Movie. If you're Marissa is doing the zeros and ones, who's also a co-host on Anatomy with me.
So fantastic.
You can just find me on Twitter and Instagram at The Other Scott M, or WeLiveEntertainment.com.
My name is Simon Thompson. You can find me at Showbiz Simon on Instagram and Twitter. Pretty sure I'll get some comments after
Twitters?
The show this week.
Yes.
If you want to follow the show, it's at Meet Movie Press. And as we always say here on the show, if you are a female journalist and you want to come on the show, we would love to have you on the show. If you're a journalist of color, we would love to have you on the show. If you're an LGBTQ film journalist, we would love to have you on the show. We really embrace diversity on this show. We embrace diversity and representation in the industry. We really support it. We want to be part of the conversation. Let's have this conversation. It's unbelievably important for the future Absolutely. Of the industry. But it's one small part of a very big jigsaw. So never forget the big picture. Everybody, have a great week. Watch some movies. Have a great three-day weekend. We really appreciate you. If you like what we do, tell your friends. And remember, we are your advocates. We are not your enemies. Have a great one, everybody. Bye. Take care. Thank
you. Producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, Christian Harloff, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.